What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
And welcome. Good morning. Good Sunday morning. 96.5 The Fan, After Hours, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris. As always, what's going on, my friend? Last couple of weeks, we've been watching these London Jaguars. They might get a win today.
And Doug Peterson might have found a way to save his job.
Well, yeah. He might have got run had they been back in the United States, stateside last week. But Trevor Lawrence looks good so far. I know they're playing the Patriots, but he looks good.
He's been a really weird quarterback in the sense that, you know, he had that one really good year. He had Urban Meyer as his head coach, and everybody was like, well, you know, this is a guy that was getting grinded on by some college girl at a bar when he was, you know, supposed to be back with his team. He decided not to fly back with
his team. It might have just been his friend.
And sure. And then he, you know, we all gave him the excuse, right? Oh, Urban Meyer's your head coach. No way were you going to be successful. Then Doug Peterson came in. He had a good year, made the playoffs, won a playoff game. And then everything has just sort of fallen apart since then.
It has, and it is a team that's in that category of teams that can't parlay success. Unlike the Kansas City Chiefs, been the sixth straight AFC title games. You know, the Jags built themselves up. Blake Bortles, AFC title game, right? Came crashing down. Chiefs ruined them, actually. And then they sucked for a while. And then they made that comeback, had that playoff win. Now they suck again. These teams are like wasting quarterbacks, man. That's the one thing. Trevor Lawrence got paid, right? It's, they call it Trevor Bank Stadium now. That's the new name of Duval. And that passionate fan base. Remember when the Chiefs played the Jags in the playoffs? They talked about, you know, what a great home fan base they had. And I was laughing then. It's like, this is a team that like tarps off their upper deck. They play in London twice a year. I know they're going to be doing some renovations of the stadium, but sorry. But the Jags and Doug Peterson need to part ways at some point.
I would like to be the first to congratulate Doug Peterson for being part of the offensive mindset in Kansas City in 2025.
He'll be here. He'll be here working with Nagy. They'll be working former coach of the year, Matt Nagy, as many coach of the years as Andy Reid does, to be quite honest with you. But yesterday was one of those, I know you were locked into the K-State game as you always are. Do you ever get up in the morning and watch College game day?
No, I think I've only, the only college game day I watched was when they were in KU last year. And I just because it was a big deal that it was in KU for the first time ever.
KU, by the way, had their big homecoming game at Arrowhead Stadium.
I don't know if we can call it big homecoming.
Oh, it's 112th homecoming Kansas. Did it at Arrowhead. Hey, nice win for Kansas. We'll get into that. Drew Nixon joins us at 11 o'clock. But I love that show, College Game Day. And seeing Saban on there, man, breaking things down and then dealing with McAfee, which I think he deep down likes, you know, because McAfee gets everybody fired up. But just the passion and what that show's become. The big deal, and even like Fox, their big noon kickoff, they have huge fan bases there. They were in Indiana yesterday, just all the amount of people. But I'm just blown away. That show is just getting better and better. It's always been good, but man, it brings in that passion, excitement of what college football is all about.
Well, and I think that, you know, if whether you're like a college student or just a fan of a team, like let's say hypothetically, you know, one of those shows came out, Fox, you know, came out and did their pregame show at the Arrowhead parking lot, right? Like, that'd be, if you're there, you know, and you get to sit there and listen to them talk about the Chiefs, like, that's cool, you know? I remember when Tony Gonzalez came back on that Thursday night game, right? For the first time, Amazon's first Thursday night game here at Arrowhead.
Yeah.
Right? And Tony Gonzalez was here, and they had that large crowd of people. Like, that's a cool experience to be able to have. So, yeah, I see why, you know, people like those shows, and especially, you know, you get that live audience there where you can get, you know, 100, 150 people, like, around the desk. yeah, that's a cool thing to be able to be part of.
No, it's definitely cool, and I enjoy doing it and getting up and watching college game day because I just love the excitement, the passion they bring for the sport and seeing all the fans, you know, excited to have college game day there. But I think they do a tremendous show. And the coaches, whenever they join them, usually the coaches, like Sarkisian, he joined them up on stage and talks in the show and do some breakdowns. They're doing a lot more breakdowns of games, too, and I like that. But I'll say one thing is for sure yesterday is the amount of teams right now that are sucking because they need a quarterback. Good luck. Good luck to getting a quarterback in the draft. As you know, we do that Character Concerns podcast each week where we look at the NFL draft and the prospects, NFL prospects. And last year spent a lot of time on wide receivers, obviously, because I thought that's where the Chiefs were going to go. But we talked about the other positions as well. This year, I'm telling you, the running back class loaded. So do I think the Chiefs will actually draft a running back in the mid-rounds? Yeah, I think this year. Not the first round. Definitely not first or second round. But mid-rounds, I do believe so. It's deep. Tight end class is ridiculously good this year. Much better. The quarterback class, though, is bad. No Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams in this class. There's not. Matter of fact, right now, if I had one quarterback to draft, it'd be Cam Ward. Cam Ward of Miami. And you can't blame him for how bad the defense in Miami's been the last couple of weeks. What, 34 points, 35 points, 45 points? Cam Ward's still doing the job, and he's doing the job at the end of the game. It's like coming back against Cal and that seesaw game yesterday against Louisville. That's the one quarterback I think kind of has that it factor. And maybe Carson Beck, but that was kind of sloppy yesterday against Texas. Quinn Ewers, who's looked upon being a first-round pick and would have been last year, because the NFL, the supply and demand, teams are so starved on quarterbacks, he wasn't good, man. And he didn't even look good against Oklahoma. They got the job done because of that defense. But Quinn Ewers looked off. He had a couple fumbles he lost yesterday, had the pick, got benched. Arch Manning comes in, looked equally as bad. That was his big opportunity, come in the game, save the day. Couldn't do it. He fell apart. But which quarterback direction is you going? I mean, are we going to get down where Warwick of Indiana is drafted? I think going to the combine is going to be extremely interesting because the level of quarterbacks coming out this year, it's not like that instant savior. I don't see any Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams in this class. Cam Ward, I like Cam Ward. I think he'll be a good pro. He's good at Washington State, good at Miami. But as far as quarterbacks, man, they're starving. And maybe Carson Beck's it. I mean, he didn't have that experience, but of course he does this year. They do go on the road. They've beaten two top 10 teams now in Georgia. But I'm telling you, Quentin, for these teams starved on quarterback, like the Raiders desperately want to get a quarterback in there. And, you know, for Tom Brady and groom a new quarterback now that he's a part owner there, good luck because this is not a good quarterback class.
You know, this might actually be good for teams like Pittsburgh, right? Because if you have a quarterback, it's not a good quarterback class. And so maybe one of these above average quarterback that have good tools but just haven't performed well in college, maybe a team like Pittsburgh, you know, who's not going to flunk out the year to be able to draft a quarterback, they might be able to get a quarterback and work with him and try and develop him. So maybe this will work out well for some of those middle-of-the-road teams and teams like the Raiders who have nothing to build around. You know, they're the ones that are really going to suck.
Shedeur Sanders will be drafted. He will. Certainly a quality quarterback. Nobody can do, but can he humble himself a little bit? Can you bring that down? Can you get the guys in the locker room with That's Your Daddy Dion being there? Can you get the guys to buy into what you're doing? I mean, he's got a lot of extracurricular he does. You know, he plays his own music, you know, him singing in the locker room after games. But certainly he's going to be up there. He's going to be a first-round quarterback. Jalen Milroe of Alabama, he was absolutely terrible down the stretch. We're talking about guys that just melt down when they have the chance to do things. I mean, just missing, flat out missing wide open people. That's considered he's considered a top five quarterback in the draft this year. And I'm going, wow, you're really starved on quarterbacks. Because Cam Ward, again, he's the only one going out and consistently winning.
And a bad quarterback class isn't great for Kansas City because, you know, you want as many quarterbacks to go in front of you as possible because that means more talent can fall to you.
Yeah, there's going to be some. I mean, Dylan Gabriel, I'm interested in that. The often, you know, off-transfer guy, UCF, Oklahoma, playing really well at Oregon. But he's at 6 foot now. that might be a bit of a stretch when they end up, you know, measurement the combine could be 5'11", something like that. Garrett Nussmeier's getting some run at LSU. But again, a guy like Garrett Nussmeier might get himself in the first round, obviously. But the thing about it is, Garrett Nussmeier, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we're talking third round, fourth round quarterback. But again, they'll be overdrafted this year because the NFL is so starved for him, because everybody also wants that, you know, Brock Purdy syndrome guy. The fact the guy you can have come in and you not have to pay him right away, like San Francisco, when they pay Brock Purdy, which he's having a great year, they're going to get to pay him a ton of money. But they can spread that money out now because they're not paying their quarterback. Everybody wants that guy. I just don't see him, man. I just don't see that winner killer instinct with these quarterbacks.
And, you know, the thing, when people bring up how effective Brock Purdy has been, you know, the part of the conversation that gets left out sometimes is just how well-built that team was before they got Brock Purdy in there, and the fact they had a head – like, they had such a well-built infrastructure around him that they could plug in and play a quarterback that doesn't have a lot of great tools, but he was able to be successful around him. There are teams that are not just quarterback-starved, but just talent-starved in general. The Raiders are a great example of that. They just traded their best receiver. They have nobody on offense. Their offensive line sucks. They have no – their head coach sucks. They don't even have, like, a good offensive coordinator to build a scheme around him. Their defensive backfield, I swear to you, has been bad my entire life. And they have, what, Max Crosby? That's the Raiders right now. And so it's going to take more than one draft in order to rebuild this thing. And if you're the Raiders, you shouldn't – going into this, you shouldn't draft a quarterback heading into this year, because it's going to take more than one draft to rebuild your team. You just need to do the good old-fashioned best player available, because there is no talent on your team.
But they keep setting themselves further back. And I call this the reboot 2.0 in the AFC West. So far, so good for the Broncos. Because remember when they brought in Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett, then J.C. Jackson goes to the Chargers and Khalil Mack. And they start building up the Chargers and Brandon Staley. Then in Vegas, you had Chandler Jones going over there. And you had Devontae Adams and Josh McDaniel, that whole thing. And everybody had to scrap everything they did. And then you got Sean Payton in Denver. Russell Wilson's jettisoned off. It's Bo Nix now. The Chargers, Jim Harbaugh, completely different group. And then the Raiders continue to still be the Raiders and are just complete mess. They haven't drafted well at all. Mike Mayock was a huge failure for them in the front office. But it's like I've said before, the board game, where you hit that space that says go back to start. That's where you go back when you don't have the quarterback. You go right back to start. And they want Tom Brady to be instrumental, you know, in some of their player selections and stuff like that. But good luck. I mean, I think they could win with a Cam Ward. They better make it a trade for a quarterback too. There's no reason you can't do that, because they're going to have to give up capital to go back to getting the quarterback. Now they're able to get away with not having Devontae Adams, you know, still on that payroll since they traded him to the Jets. But it's the Mahomes syndrome. Everybody wants that guy. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Everybody wants those guys. That's why the Jets went on and paid so much for Aaron Rodgers. Everybody wants a quarterback, because we all know when you get to the postseason, you got to have that guy with the it. And that's what I'm saying when I'm watching college football. I'm watching a bunch of guys that don't have it, especially in this draft class.
Yeah, it's you know how I feel about Bo Nix at this point, right, Bank? I am not a believer in the Bo Nix. I think that...
Well, I'm with you.
He, man, that first throw against the Saints, I mean, he overthrew one guy and underthrew another guy in the same pass. Both of them were wide open, and he somehow split the difference between the two. The guy's got happy feet in the pocket. He cannot just settle down and just step and throw in order to complete a pass. So he overthrows guys all the time. He has too many interceptions. You know who he reminds me a lot of? He reminds me a lot of Justin Fields when he was back at Chicago. I mean, for God's sake, he leads the team in rushing. Yeah, that's what Bo Nix leads the Denver Broncos in rushing. So that's what he reminds me a lot of, Justin Fields. And Justin Fields had all sorts of problems back when he was in Chicago, and he's carried a lot of them into Pittsburgh now. No, I'm not a believer in Bo Nix, so I think Sean Payton has done a good job trying to put lipstick on a pig in order to cover up some of the problems that Denver has had on offense.
But you got to have that offensive coordinator to go with that quarterback. You know, Brandon Staley, when he was with the Chargers, you know, came over as a defensive coordinator for 1 year. He was defensive coordinator with the Rams. Did well, gets the job out there, didn't work out with Justin Herbert. And Brandon Staley, in his background, he was like a quarterback. back in college when you go back there. But he was defensive-minded coach. Jim Harbaugh is a nice fit with Herbert, you know, former NFL quarterback with Justin Herbert. He understands what a quarterback thinks of. It's why the running game's so dominant. You know, let's give the quarterback a little bit of a break. And so with the Chiefs and Andy Reid, the Patrick Mahomes, everybody's looking for that magic. And right now they just can't find it. And it's better for the Chiefs, trust me, because that savior's not walking that door in the NFL. Now, last year's class provided some good quarterback. I think Jaden Daniels, that's my dude there. Jaden Daniels, I think, is going to be the stud. Caleb Williams appears to be, you know, good at this point, too. And these guys have to work out. But again, there's always going to be that bust that someone reached on in the NFL draft, which happens every year.
Every year. And, you know, I mean, we could see so far this draft class looked, I mean, Drake May, I don't know how he played today, but last week, you know, he had a couple of really good throws.
He's 13 of 18 for 109 and one touchdown so far in this game.
Yeah. I mean, that's better than what Bo Nix has done. So, yeah, and we don't know what.
But the Broncos have one less win than the Chiefs at this point, which is crazy to say.
I do think that Sean Payton has brought something to that team. But, yeah, there's not a lot that Bo Nix could do in order to convince me that he's going to be a good quarterback over the next couple of games. It's going to have to be long-sustained success because I just don't see it.
Well, they need two things. They needed a coach, the quarterback. They have the coach. Quarterback, let's wait and see on that. Our phone number, 913-586-7965. The Jay Southland Tow Service text line, always open for you. 913-586-7965, same as the phone number. Send us your text. You're more than welcome to call. But coming up next, we'll look at this Chiefs and Niners game. Chiefs have won the last four against San Francisco. We'll break down this game, look at some numbers that's out there. And are you pumped up about this game? Let me know if you are, because that was the big talk. Are people, because in San Francisco, man, they're looking at the Chiefs like this is the big one. Be honest with you, in the grand scheme of things, it's not. We'll discuss that next.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to 96.5, the Fan, Jay Binkley. Quentin Morris here with you, taking you right up till noon. Chiefs pregame begins right there, right at 96.5, the Fan. You can hear the game right here at 96.5, the Fan as well. Chiefs in Frisco. Mitch Holtus, Dana Hughes, Josh Klingler get you set at noon. Art Haynes with the pregame show. And, of course, joining him, as always, Dan Israel, putting that thing together. It's a great pregame show. It's just an awesome show. Just hearing that, you know, growing up and just hearing it and just gets those juices flowing for the Chiefs game. And I'll join him, talk some college football at about 12:45 in that college football segment. But the text line asked me if Brady would bring in Belichick. This is actually pretty interesting, Quentin. I asked Mitch about this sorts Friday on our fans football show that we do, or Desmond Moses. The one thing I've always thought with Belichick, yes, it would make sense, and at first it looked like there might be some fractured relationship. You know, when Brady goes off to Tampa and wins a Super Bowl, and the old chicken and the egg, who was it, Bill or was it Tom? Tom goes out, wins a Super Bowl. Belichick did not look great without a quarterback. Needed Tom. I see Belichick coaching again. I really do. 100% think he coaches again, but I think he coaches in Dallas is where he go. The Raiders would make a lot of sense to try to lure him to Vegas. They desperately need to build a culture there, a fan base there in Las Vegas, like the Golden Knights have done in hockey. They haven't, because it's visiting fans that come in, just like the Steelers fans that absolutely dominated Allegiant Stadium last week, and you'll see much the same next week when the Chiefs are in Las Vegas. But they didn't have a quarterback. Like Belichick, at his age, it's about chasing down Don Shula.
100%.
That's a vendetta for him. He wants to beat Shula. Shula was critical of Belichick in the past. He wants that record, and he doesn't have that guy. Now, you could say, does he have that guy in Dallas? Like, I'm skeptical about Dak. Dak puts up great, great numbers, but not always. And those receivers weren't running good routes last weekend. You heard Trey Aikman putting it down on those receivers, and he was 100% right. But Dak is a better option than what they have in Las Vegas. I don't see Belichick gelling with an Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. I think he'd work with Dak.
Yeah, because you're 100% correct that he's shooting for that record, the record to have the most wins out of any coach in NFL history. And in order to do that, you'd have to go to a place that has some infrastructure already built up, right? The tricky part is that in order for him to get that head coaching job, he has to go to a place with a head coach slash team that's bad enough for them to get fired. But he needs to go to a place that has enough that, you know, in 1 year or so, he's able to build the team that he wants in order to get those regular season wins. And no matter how you look at it, the Raiders are not going to be that team. They're definitely bad enough to get their head coach fired, but this is a team that's gone through, I swear, four different quarterbacks in the last 2.5 years.
You think of other coaches like Doug Peterson, would Belichick fit in Jacksonville? But Jacksonville wants to back off. Shad Khan's even said so. They want to back off, draft more players, be kind of in that situation because they paid Trevor Lawrence all that money. To be honest with you, here's what I would do. I'd fire McDermott and bring him to Buffalo. And McDermott, man, I mean, you think of him. Yeah, I mean, he wins games, but does he win it all? No. Sean McDermott was almost fired last year when Buffalo slid. I mean, Buffalo went down to the final week of the year, either being the number two seed or not even in the playoffs. This year, they're dang lucky they didn't lose their third straight game when the Jets blew that game against the Bills. But honestly, can you imagine? He knows that division. He knows that division inside and out. Matter of fact, when Belichick was with Brady, they won 32 of 35 games going in against the Buffalo Bills. They had success. He owns that division. I would keep him there, and I'd put him with Josh Allen, to be quite honest with you. That's what I would do. Hey, it's about the final line. I don't care about just winning or getting to the postseason. No, you got to win the whole damn thing. That's what you got to do. Belichick, I'd mix him with Josh Allen. Boom, I think you'd be set. That's what I would do.
Especially a place like Buffalo, who is one of the teams that hasn't won a Super Bowl and has had many chances to do so, but hasn't been able to break through. So, yeah, you're sort of completing, you know, a lot of the things that you're asking him for, right? Team is good enough to go out and get those wins. Josh Allen is good enough to pull together a mediocre offense, offensive weapons, and Bill Belichick can come in and build that defense the way that he wants it. Plus, it would be funny to see him go into New England and beat the Patriots.
Text line thinks Giants. Well, obviously, there's a history there with Belichick. He likes it. But do they have the answer? Is Daniel Jones, is that the answer for Belichick going forward? No, it's not.
Yeah, I think the quarterback situation is too bad for him to go there.
And again, if you want to draft and develop quarterbacks, I don't see that it's not through here. Josh Allen and Belichick is ready-made, plus he knows that division. He's a better coach than Sean McDermott. I would 100% go that direction. Again, you're talking about a coach that almost lost three straight. They lost 35-10 to Baltimore. Then they lost to Houston 23-20. They beat the Jets 23-20. But you saw that. Mike Williams runs the wrong route. It gets dropped. They missed two field goals in that game. I feel the Jets could have and should have won that game against the Buffalo Bills. Of course, they didn't do it. But let's not forget McDermott, defensive-minded guy, when the Chiefs tied him up with 13 seconds, that was the number one scoring defense in the NFL and couldn't get the job done against the Chiefs. But Belichick has beaten the Chiefs in the postseason.
Yes, he has.
So, again, all these things come together. He's not going to Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. You know that's not going to happen. You know he's not going in Houston with C.J. Stroud and DeMeco Ryans. So what's the next best thing? It's the Buffalo Bills. Again, McDermott will win you games. He'll sell some tickets. You'll get there. But can you win the whole thing? No. Put Belichick in Buffalo with Josh Allen. I mean, I hate to say that as a Chiefs fan. That's the last thing you'd want to see is that combination of Josh Allen and Bill Belichick. You would. He's not going to Vegas. If he goes to Vegas, he's not going to catch Shula, the 26 wins he needs. Not going to do it.
Yeah, unless he does it over like 13 years.
Yep. Coming up next, though, we'll look at that Frisco, look at some of the numbers, break them down, plus why Emmanuel Acho is an idiot. Hey, welcome back to After Hours, Jay Binkley. Quentin Morris producing the operation, leading you right up till noon where Chiefs pregame begins right here at 96.5. The Fan, Mitch Holtis, Dana Hughes, Josh Klingler on the call today. That game will be right here, 96.5. The Fan, the great Art Haynes, the great Dan Israel, you know, part of that pregame show. Looking forward to that. Chiefs, Niners, Chiefs are the underdog. keep making him the underdog. Patrick Mahomes 11-1-1 against the spread, 10-3 straight up. I got a kick out of this. Emmanuel Acho, his brother does a great job like broadcasting on ESPN, but Emmanuel likes to throw like hot takes out there, right? Here's his last one. He goes, the Chiefs have won 11 straight games, but they've done it by scoring 27 or points or less. Facts, 100% facts. Eventually, a team is going to be able to score more than three TDs. Eventually, a team is going to put up 28 points. What will they do then? What will they do when Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry put up 35? Well, they had a chance and they didn't. What will they do when Josh Allen, Amari Cooper, and James Cook put up 35? It's great, but they haven't. But what happened when somebody did put up 35 points? The last time somebody scored over 30 points was the Eagles in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Who won that game? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Chiefs won the game. The bottom line is they're not letting anybody score. Nobody scored over 30 points in 26 games against this team. So it's kind of what they are right now. Andy Reid, in my opinion, has kind of reinvented the wheel, what he's doing. They ran that 14 personnel with four tight ends quite a bit last week. They're second in the NFL in run efficiency, but they only have one run over 11 yards with a running back. They have four total over 11 yards, but three of them are Patrick Mahomes. Or two of them are Patrick Mahomes. One's Xavier Worthy on that end of the round that he ran. But they're just a smash mouth, punch in the face, be smarter than you football team. That's just what they are. And the fact that you go all the way last year, this year, no one's scoring 30 points against this team. And it happens all the time. Everybody's laying the flowers at the Ravens. And I will say this to Emmanuel. The Ravens gave up 38 points 2 weeks ago to the Bengals. They're the 31st ranked pass defense. Yeah, this isn't the same Ravens defense you've seen in the past. Just like the 49ers defense the Chiefs will be facing is not as good as when it was with DeMeco Ryans, who's now doing a hell of a job as head coach in Houston. Much different. But this is what the Chiefs are going to be. San Francisco, though, very good offensively. Number two offense in the NFL. Second in passing. Again, Brock Purdy's had a hell of a year. Third in rushing. That's one thing Frisco's always been able to do is run the football. It's Kyle Shanahan. It's his system. Christian McCaffrey obviously did a great job about it last year. He's banged up, not playing. Jordan Mason, AC sprain, looks like he's going to play today for the 49ers. Doesn't really matter because I kind of like their third string running back, Isaac Grendo, a ton. I liked him last year in the draft a lot. I think the guy's got a lot of talent, and he was drafted by Frisco in the fourth round. But here's the thing. Here's where they're vulnerable. Defense. Kansas City is 14th in the NFL. Not great, but right in the middle of the pack. 35.6% giving up third downs. Third down percentage. San Fran is yielding third downs 43.4% of the time. So 43% of the time that other teams, they'll pick up the first down on them. Offensively, they're very good on third down. 47.5% they convert on third down. Chiefs are at 42.6%. But the Chiefs are good at limiting running backs. It's what they've done all year. And you'd think that's all right, strength on strength. Strength is their running game. And because Juwan Jennings, their leading receiver in yards, isn't playing today. Debo Samuel's always a bit banged up, but he's playing. They held Derrick Henry to just 46 yards rushing. Zach Moss of the Bengals, they held him to 34 yards. Bijan Robinson, 16 carries, 31 yards. It's like 2 yards a carry. J.K. Dobbins, 14 carries, 32 yards. Alvin Kamara, 11 carries, 26 yards. Who's the next victim? Teams aren't running against it. The way they're flying to the football, the way the linebackers are flowing, the fact defensive linemen are sitting in their gaps and keeping the linebackers to be able to flow, and Leo Schnell coming in and doing his deal, and Nick Bolton coming up against the run. But Frisco, yes, very good against the run. The one advantage both teams have are both these teams are bad against tight ends. And you have two of the best in Kittle and Kelce going into this game. I think it's a great matchup, but this game means so much more to San Francisco. When our guys went on a lot of 95.7 the game out in San Fran, and they were talking about this game, how big this is to them. Like, this is a building block for them. Remember the Ravens a couple years ago when Lamar Jackson got his one victory against Patrick Mahomes? It seemed like they wanted to throw a parade afterwards. And Buffalo's been doing this during the regular season, but they can't beat the Chiefs in the postseason.
Or Same thing with the Bengals, who've been doing that for their one playoff win against them.
The one playoff win. But Buffalo, or excuse me, the 49ers, this is the step they want to get over. They have want to beat Patrick Mahomes. But in the grand scheme of things, how much this game matters to the Chiefs? Well, it's not an AFC game, so the AFC portion of when you're trying to figure out the number one seed, you don't have to worry about that in this game. It actually hurts you less than losing to anybody else or losing to a bad football team, which actually is better than losing to somebody that would have the tiebreaker over you. But Frisco, this is what they're worried about. This was a radio show, our sister station in the Bay Area, 95.7 The Game, earlier this week.
It's a warrior-like feel to them, where it's like Kevin Durant and Steph, all right, we'll play 6 minutes of good ball and we'll knock you out in the fourth quarter. That's what it feels like when I watch them. And I know we're really, 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 really good. And we keep looking over at them and I'm like, but they're better.
They are better.
And it drives me nuts.
They are better.
I hate saying it. Like, you know it drives me nuts. And I watched that guy, Mahomes.
Oh,
God, he's awesome and I hate him.
He's awesome and I hate him. Of course, man. The Chiefs are that stumbling block. The Chiefs are circle the calendar game for the Niners. They just are. This town is so used to success. They've beat the Niners twice in the Super Bowl. They've been the four last five. It's ho-hum. Again, in the grand scheme of things, you'd rather lose in the NFC than in the AFC. Like right now, you're looking at, you know, top seed Billings earlier on. Obviously, the Bengals, they need to turn things around. But when you had that victory over Cincinnati and Baltimore, and you start saying, okay, they got the Bills later on this year, those are the games that matter. Those are the games that matter. You know, the Cleveland Browns, teams like it, that doesn't matter, but it is an AFC game. For instance, last year I had Kadarius Toney. Basically, he lost two games on his own last year. Had the Chiefs won those, they would have had the same record as the Ravens at 9-3 in the AFC, and the Chiefs would have had home field advantage because they had the tiebreakers over Baltimore. They had a better AFC record than the Baltimore Ravens. That game would have been played at Arrowhead instead of Baltimore, which that could have cost them a chance at the Super Bowl. But I will say this, it's kind of better off now. You know, that they went on the road and just dispelled those rumors. I was showing you, like, Patrick Mahomes' road splits and home splits. It is funny how much better of a quarterback he is on the road than he is at home. He just is. And that was the one thing that was driving me crazy last year when people were told, oh, can he go on the road and win in the playoffs? And then he proved, and he went out and did it. But Patrick Mahomes splits. He's got 1,300 more yards passing on the road than at home. And just one more game. I mean, it is insane. You look at Patrick Mahomes in his career and what he's done, home and road, and you tell me, is it better home Pat or better road Pat? He's played 50 games at home. He's played 51 on the road. He's won 39 games at home. He's won 40 on the road. Very similar. Yardage-wise, 14,164 at home, 15,495 on the road. That's over 1,300 more. He's got 122 touchdowns on the road, 103 touchdowns at home. His completion percentage at home, 65%. His completion percentage on the road, 67%. His rating, 98.8 at home. His rating on the road, a staggering 106.9. These are the stats they'll never tell you because they want to build up this false narrative that he can't play on the road, which is insane.
Yeah, of course the 49ers keep talking about how important the game is against Kansas City because they've beaten them four times since Patrick Mahomes has been here, and they beat him in four different ways. They beat him in the Super Bowl twice when they had double-digit leads. They beat the brakes off of them last year when they went to San Francisco to play them. And then when the last time that San Francisco was in Arrowhead, they blew Jimmy Garoppolo's knee out and they beat them in four different ways every time that they face them. They've beat them with two different quarterbacks. So, yeah, of course the 49ers fan base and the 49ers sports talk shows out there don't want to play this game, or they keep looking at Kansas City.
And they're just smarter. Look at the overtime in the Super Bowl. I mean, it was exactly dumb what Frisco did. You got to be smarter. Let's go to the phone lines. Big T and Shawnee. What's up, Big T?
Hey, man, thanks for taking my call. It's B&B, Breakfast with Bink. So, Bink, I wanted to talk about something real quick before I talk about the Chiefs. You know, I grew up in Yankees breaking my heart, man, every year. And I finally see they broke through the barrier. 15 years, those underachieving turds, it took them to get back to the World Series. 15 years, the big market, the big money. We've been to two. We won one. They ain't going to win it either. So screw the Yankees. But, Bink, I'm glad you're talking about these Chiefs. You know, Frisco's had this game circled. It's like their Super Bowl. They've got problems. We're in their head. It's the Chiefs. It's the Chiefs factor. Cincinnati, Buffalo, Baltimore, you name it, Bink. When we play them and we get in their heads and we beat them, that's all they want to think about because we're the king. And Patrick Mahomes, he is. He's the king of sling. He's the best trigger man in the league. He's the field general. And he doesn't have all these fancy stats, but he just wins. And what do great teams do? They find a way to win. I'm sick of hearing about Josh Allen 5 weeks into the season, six. Oh, Josh Allen this. Oh, Josh Allen that. Screw Buffalo. Screw Josh Allen. Screw Burrow. Screw Lamar. It's the Kansas City Chiefs, everybody. At the end of the day, we're going to be 14-3. We'll be at the top of the mountain again, playing for another Super Bowl, and Pat Mahomes is going to be your MVP. Let's go out and kick some Frisco ass today. And as always, let's go Chiefs.
That would be, you see those Dr. Pepper, the hype train. I love that Fiendsville commercials. You know, it's the hype train. But Big T's right, man. This, everybody builds this up. Again, Chiefs are in a different situation. How they look at games and how they and how other teams do. I remember when the Chiefs were trying to, you know, to build up this machine. They looked at the Patriots as that team. It wasn't, hey, we have Raiders and Chargers, not worried about that. We got to beat that team. We got to knock that team off. And then when Brady goes to Tampa Bay, okay, the Steelers have always found success. But the thing is, Nolan, or Quinn, you got to get to this point where this whole second guessing and who and what this team is, we'll describe that. Chiefs are running the ball 47% of the time, which is way higher than Andy Reid has done in his past. Plus, is this the week they pick up a wide receiver via trade? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back, Jay Binkley. Quentin Moore is producing the operation. By the way, College Game Day decided they're going to go to Bloomington, Indiana. Give them some run next week. They're playing Washington, by the way. And don't look for it on network TV. This is a Big Ten network game. College Game Day is going down too. But Lee Corso making the return there. Big noon kickoff was there last week. So Kurt Cignetti in Indiana starting to get some run. Looking forward to that. Chiefs and Niners coming up in a little bit. Must contain Nick Bosa. That could be a problem. He's number two in the NFL as far as his 35 pressures are concerned this week. Jesse Newell from the KC Star had a great article about the Chiefs running game the other day. You know, he points out 47% of the Chiefs plays it runs, 13th in the NFL. But check this out. This is what Jesse put here. Reeves ranked during his previous six seasons with Mahomes 23rd, 23rd, 28th, 27th, 25th, and 26th. Ranking in the NFL as far as how much they run the ball. Kind of a shift in philosophy a bit, wouldn't you say, Quentin? Finding a way just to win a game, that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's recognizing the fact that your pass game, due to injuries, due to, you know, whether your offensive line not playing great, it's about making sure that you're taking the way you're running your team and getting wins. There are so many coaches that in the NFL, college, whatever, that they say, this is the way we play. I need you to do this. Andy Reid and the best coaches aren't like this. You know, they just find a way to win. They say, hey, we're going to look for guys like this. You know, this is the scheme I want to run. But if things don't work out, we can be flexible. We can change. And Kansas City's done that over the last couple years. They've turned into a defensive team first, right? Let's be honest about what we're seeing every Sunday. We're seeing a team that is coming out and is playing through their defense, right? I mean, we've given stats on stats on stats about how Kansas City's defense has limited damage, right? We haven't allowed more than 28 points in 2 years, right? So you're playing through your defense, and like Patrick Mahomes has the shortest air yards, right, per attempt.
Yeah, he's off to his lowest. His numbers are basically as low as he's had in his career. But
you're 5-0, so it doesn't matter.
There's still not a general manager in football that wouldn't take him out of any other quarterback if he had the chance. I mean, there's not one. It doesn't matter. You got to win the game. And not only that, look what he's winning with, man. Yeah, it's not exactly a juggernaut wide receiver group.
This wide receiver group.
He's got his one guy, Juju, who was on the couch, who didn't play well at all last year in New England, and released by him. there was question whether he's going to play or not because of the hamstring, and he's going to play today. But when you're sitting there worried if Juju can play, props to your quarterback.
When that injury report came out, I think there was a real pucker factor here in Kansas City because if Juju Smith-Schuster isn't playing, I mean, this is going to be the Sky Moore game. Is that what was going
to
happen?
If it's to the point where you're worried if Juju's playing or not, I know he had a big game, 7-for-130, but go back and watch that game. All right, he was open a ton. And not just open, he was wide open because they didn't respect him. There was no respect given to him, and you know what? They came through, and the Chiefs did damage because they exploited the weakness. If they're not going to cover him, hey, we're going to do it. Frisco will cover him. He'll cover him a lot more than his last game. Trust me on that with Frisco because the tape's out there now. Okay, Juju can catch it. But the other thing that bothered me was the contested catch. Again, when you get into the end zone, that play that went off his hands into Colin Saunders' hands became a 13-point swing.
It really did.
Because they came down, they scored a touchdown, they missed the extra point, so 13-point swing off that play. It's why the receivers, and they might not make a move for receiver if it wasn't for just how thin they are, how precarious the line is if somebody gets hurt or not. Like, you can't afford to have an Xavier Worthy go down. At this point, you can't even afford if a Juju Smith-Schuster goes down. Because get ready, get set for more 14 personnel with Jody Fortson in his tight end and four active tight ends, and look for more, a lot more ground and pound with Kareem Hunt.
And, you know, we brought up this stat earlier, but I kind of want to double down on it. You know, we talk about how Kansas City has been running the ball a lot, but they haven't been running the ball for big gains. They've been very efficient, right? Four yards, 5 yards, 6 yards. The problem with that is if you get stuff at the line on first down and you're in second and nine and you fall behind the sticks, you can put yourself in some pretty big trouble because you don't have an explosive playmaker to really try and gain some of those yards back. So you have to be efficient because Kansas City doesn't have explosive running backs.
Yeah, they're lacking that, but the good news is only 8% of their runs have been zero or negative yards. That leads the NFL. Like, that was the big problem the last couple of years. You know, short yardage, can you get that 1 yard? Third and one, fourth and one, can you keep Mahomes and the offense on the field? 8% of the time they've had zero or negative yards, leads the NFL. That is a category, that is a welcome category for sure. But as far as receivers and trading for one, yeah, I think that's for necessity. Not only that, I've heard the adage, well, you know, Amari Cooper's 30 years old or whatever, you know, when he went to Buffalo. The Chiefs don't need a receiver for the long term, man. Just get one through February, man. Get that rental player. I'm 100%. They have pushed all in to win a third in a row. They brought back everybody on defense, paid Chris Jones. They're pushing all the chips to the middle of the table, want to win three in a row. Then that includes going out and getting a receiver just as a rental till February. So be it. You don't need him for the long haul. I think Hollywood Brown comes back this team next year. Didn't think there was a chance in hell he would, but now I do. Because he's not playing, you know, to go out and play with Reed and Mahomes and earn that money. It's not going to be there for him. He's because he didn't play. So I feel he comes back. Xavier Worthy, clearly. Rashee Rice will be back with his team. Obviously, you can't deal with the suspension. And I still think the Chiefs go in the first round at wide receiver.
You're going to go in and draft a high wide receiver. And let's be honest, there's always a Hollywood Brown type in free agency. And you can bring Hollywood Brown back, and you're always going to be able to find another middle of the road kind of, you know, 700 to 800 yard wide receiver in free agency. So Kansas City will be able to tack it towards the end of the year. The problem is now, and I really wish that Kansas City would have been able to finalize the Amari Cooper trade. I really think that that would have solved some of the problems, but you know, you can't look back, you have to look forward, and we have to talk about a solution for today.
Yeah, that's who I wanted, because cerebral player, and played at Alabama under Nick Saban. The guy's always just a smart, headsy veteran. He does lead the NFL in drops with 9, but look at who's throwing to him. So there's always that to look at. And not only that, you know who led the NFL in drops last year? Puka Nacua. Number 2 in the NFL in drops last year was Tyreek Hill. Pretty good receivers, I think, still, right? You know, I think they made up for that.
When you get a lot of passes, you're going to have a lot of drops, you know? Yeah. That's just how this works.
You are. Coming up next, Drew Nixon, executive producer, Cody and Gold, joins us each and every Sunday as we go around the landscape of college football.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boom.
He hates the Chiefs.
The first time ever, Mahomes goes 9-8.
He's delusional about his Bengals.
Joe Burrow's going to get the job done again because he's going to be healthy. And they're going to win, and they're going to go to New Orleans and be in the Super Bowl.
But he knows everything about college football. Here's the host of the 249 Miles of College Football podcast, Drew Nixon.
That's right, 249 Miles of College Football with Drew Nixon comes out each and every Wednesday. Wherever you get your podcast, or you can go straight over to 96.5thefan.com, hit down 435 Podcast Network, download Character Concerns first, and then do 249 football miles of football while you're at it. Good morning, Drew. What's going on?
How's it going, Bink? Appreciate you having me on again.
Hey, man. Absolutely love it, man. There's so much to dive into. Obviously, we could spend a million minutes as far as the national scene and just a bizarre, wacky day of college football, but let's start with the wackiness in Columbia with the locals. Brady Cook, the quarterback at Mizzou, you know, people were starting to get upset. They started wanting some Drew Pine in the game. Well, they got to see what that happened. So he goes down, that ankle bothering him. He leaves the game, goes to the hospital, gets an MRI, warms up in the in facility, comes back in front of a raucous crowd when making his return during the game. I haven't seen this in college football. The fact the guy being at a hospital with an MRI and then playing in that same game, completely bizarre, but big win for Missouri as they beat Auburn down the stretch 21-17.
Yeah, I was wondering what was taking him so long because the original report was he was going to get his ankle taped, and all of a sudden, like 20 minutes later, yeah, he wasn't out there. And then all of a sudden, the news comes out after, he's like, yeah, I was in the hospital, or he was in the hospital and all that other stuff. Like, the fact that that had to have been a crazy past couple hours. He said he was driving past people in a truck who were tailgating. People were like, what is he doing in a truck right now? I mean, yeah, that whole scene was crazy. But going into the game, like, this was one of those games, Bink, where you get Alabama next week and you know it's the game of the season. This is one of those games, Auburn team that was 0-3. We should beat them. We're better than them. You might look past it a little bit. Early on, I know that Brady Cook got hurt, but they didn't have the body language. They weren't ready to go. Even when Brady Cook was playing to the full effect, essentially, anyways. Defensively, they had a little bit of trouble. But Brady Cook comes back, and they get that energy boost. And a win is a win, Bink. It doesn't matter how ugly it is with this 12-team playoff. They just got to keep taking care of business now. A big win, though, that basically keeps the season alive for Missouri, because if they were to have lost to Auburn, I don't know if there was any way they would have made the playoff without having some serious help.
Agree. Auburn now 0-4 in the SEC. A pesky bunch. But hey, man, credit Missouri. 17 plays, 95-yard drive, taking 340 off the clock. But it's SEC opponents the rest of the way. And Alabama, you know, we'll get to them in a second, a very vulnerable team that's really questioning Kalen DeBoer and kind of what they're doing offensively. I wasn't impressed with Jalen Milroe at all, but we'll get to that game in just a minute. Kansas State, 45, West Virginia, 18. The really, again, this was kind of a bizarre day, I think, Drew. It was a day where Avery Johnson didn't have one rushing attempt, but fantastic through the air. We saw a different side of him. I don't know if it's still residual stuff from last week, still bothering him. The running game for Kansas State wasn't that good yesterday, but his arm was unbelievable, so we got to see a different side of Avery Johnson.
Yeah, I think this is what when we heard in the beginning of the season, hey, Avery's that passer, that Will Howard maybe wasn't necessarily one at Kansas State. He's got the arm, all of the talent there. This is the game, I think, that backs up those propositions, because he's played well. He's thrown the ball well, but as you said, they've run the ball efficiently. They didn't run the ball that great. I mean, you look at a total of 116 yards, looks good, but 116 yards. It's solid. DJ Giddens had only 57 on 19 carries. Not nearly his best game. The worst one that he's actually had this season.
Yep.
Avery needed to make plays with his arm, almost 300 yards on only 19 completions. He was airing it out, and it was really impressive. I think this is the most the best all-around game that Kansas State have played to this point, other than the Arizona game. Arizona don't look that good, obviously, and West Virginia are okay, but 45-18, comfortable win. Avery Johnson looked really good. This is the stretch now for Kansas State where they can knock off these wins one by one, leading all the way up to that Iowa State game. If they can keep it up to there, they're going to play for a spot in the Big 12 title game against Iowa State right there. And as we know, you win the Big 12, you're in the college football playoffs. So they're going to give themselves a chance if they can just keep on ticking these games off up until they get to that final game of the regular season.
They're playing a desperate team in West Virginia, always tough place to play. Go play in Morgantown. They were 3-3, kind of that crossroads game for them. But I feel they know Avery Johnson can run. We know he can run. And, you know, he can pass too, and can he lead a fourth quarter comeback like he did last week? Well, we got to see the aired out style from Avery Johnson. KU wins on homecoming that was played in a different state. I don't know how often that's happened where a team has played their homecoming game in a different state, but they played at Arrowhead. They win 42-14 over Houston. Houston's a bad team. I like their coach, Willie Fritz. They're a bad team. But the bottom line is, the Sunflower Showdown is next weekend. Thought it was going to be, you know, a bigger game than what you're seeing. We're talking like a college game day type game, but it's not going to happen with how Kansas has started this year. K-State's won 15 of these games in a row against Kansas, but you do get the Sunflower Showdown next week. Are you going?
I am not planning on going. We'll have to see if that maybe can change. The thing about this game, Bink, that's interesting. So like I said, K-State's got to start ticking these games off one by one. They're going into an environment. They're hosting it, which is great for them. But KU's 2-5. You think, oh, they're worse than they were last year and all this stuff. KU, as we know, if you've been watching throughout the season, they've been leading in literally every single game, if not tied, going into the fourth quarter of every single game. They have had every opportunity to win games. They haven't. They come off of a great win yesterday. Jalen Daniels had by far his best game yesterday, Bink.
Not even close, yeah.
The thing for KU that I said on the podcast, the 249 Miles of College Football podcast this past week, was if you're Kansas, I don't know if they make a bowl game or not. I still think there's a shot. Technically, there still is. They're only 2-5. The mindset going into every single game is we can ruin somebody's season. We can not only end this losing streak in the Sunflower Showdown, but we can beat a rival. We can almost end K-State's shot unless they win the conference of making the playoff, which is a great feeling. If you're KU, they also play, if you look at the next opponents that Kansas has going forward, they have Iowa State the next week. They host them at Arrowhead. If you knock off Iowa State, you could potentially end their chances. Then they play BYU. So that's the mindset going in for Kansas. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, in every single game, if you can be the bad guy and end people's seasons, that's the mindset going in. Or who knows, maybe KU does end up going 6-6 and making a bowl game and surprising everybody.
Well, they would have to go through some juggernauts there. Let's talk about that. The Big 12, Iowa State, you know, scores at the end of the game. They beat UCF 38-35. Iowa State still undefeated. They go to 7-0. Rocco Beck scores there at the end of the game for Iowa State to win. In a crazy game, basically the same fashion that BYU beat Oklahoma State on Friday night, 38-35, as they go to 7-0. Basically, those games both came down to the wire. BYU winning with 10 seconds left.
Yeah, that was a wild comeback. It almost made it seem like BYU's just destined to have a fantastic season, by the way, that game went. Oklahoma State decided not to tackle in that final drive, and, of course, BYU ended up winning the game. That was a ruckus environment. Iowa State, in fairness, I think I picked them to have a really good season. That pick is looking a little bit better now. They're the surprise, I think, in the Big 12, Bink, where Iowa State, I think Matt Campbell at one point was, like, the highest guy in the group of five, or in, like, the Power Five. Like, he's going to be the next one to get the job, kind of where Lance Leipold has been. Recently after that season last year, Iowa State fell off a little bit. Now they're having this season here. Matt Campbell's doing his thing. Rocco Becht is really good. The defense is one of the best in the entire country. They've only allowed 101 points the entire season. They got a better defense than Utah right now. So a little bit of the surprises, because if you look at Utah, one of the favorites, they're 4-3, 1-3. They've had injury issues. Arizona's not the team that we thought. Oklahoma State is the bottom of the barrel in the conference. So the way that college football goes is crazy sometimes, and BYU's the unexpected story. Iowa State are playing better than maybe what they were put up to be this year, and Kansas State is right there in the running. So Texas Tech also had a really bad loss yesterday that really affected things regarding their standing. So K-State are in a good spot. It's just do BYU and Iowa State lose. K-State can control that with the last game of the regular season, but we'll have to see how things go.
Nationally, there was a lot of bizarre things happening as well. And something I talked about at the beginning of the show, Drew, is – and some I'm sure we'll talk about a lot more on character concerns. The level of quarterback play is not good. If you're one of these teams that's desperate for a quarterback through the draft, like the Raiders, stuff like that, Cam Ward, I think, stands head and shoulders above guys. Carson Beck, maybe, but he looks, you know, off at times as well. Cam Ward in Miami and what he's doing, let's face it, they beat Louisville, but that defense has given up 34, 38, and 45 points the last 3 weeks. Yes, they've won them. But Cam Ward continues to get the job done.
It almost is, in a way, shades of what Mahomes had to do while at Texas Tech. Now Miami's, of course, winning the games. Mahomes, not so much. But Mahomes had to score 45, 50 points in every single game at Texas Tech at times. And Cam Ward is having to do that at Miami. Cam Ward, I think right now, if you were to say who is the Heisman tier, I think Gentee's one. I think Cam Ward is two. I think Travis Hunter is three.
Yeah, I have Travis Hunter, but sitting out the second half. I mean, Colorado won big.
I was gonna mention that. I think that, you know, the argument of Washington doesn't play anybody, he sits out games. Well, Travis Hunter did that against a Power 5 opponent to rest a shoulder. So
yeah,
I think that he's in the conversation, but I think Cam Ward is up there too. Cam Ward showed everybody why he's as good of a quarterback as he is. I'm with you. I think that Cam Ward, I think Shador is really good. After that, though, you're right, there's a question mark. And after watching the Georgia-Texas game yesterday, Quinn Ewers gets benched. He didn't look good at all. Carson Beck did not look at all what he's put out to be, which is an accurate quarterback. He's had way too many picks this year. Few and far between are the really good quarterbacks. But in fairness to college football fans, it makes it a little bit more chaotic. I do think Georgia and Texas' defenses are really, really good, though, too.
Speaking of bizarre, again, that 30-15 Georgia at Texas matchup, Texas got punched in the face against Georgia. They got a welcome to the SEC. As you mentioned, Carson Beck, 41 attempts, only 23 completions, three picks. Quinn Ewers had an interception, and he lost two fumbles. All right, he gets benched for some Arch Manning, which Quinn Ewers didn't look sharp at the beginning of that Oklahoma game either. Gets benched, looking for a little bit of spark with Arch Manning. Arch Manning fumbled the football as well. He gets re-benched, and then Quinn Ewers starts the second half. But Georgia 30, Texas 15, and really the only thing people are talking about is a play on the field that happened where they called defensive pass interference, where Texas intercepted the football, and it wasn't interference whatsoever. If anything, it was offensive pass interference. And the play call was reversed because the officials had time to talk about it. I'm glad they did. They actually made the right call. But the game was delayed because people were throwing beer cans and bottles on the field, and that gave them time. So that actually helped them by throwing stuff on the field, which shouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, I think that this is – so I don't think – like that – look, they overcame the call. Georgia was dominant anyways. They were not going to lose the football game the way that defense was playing. But I think that this – I think it sets a bit of a bad precedent here, Bink, where if it's a close game and it's a sketchy call, hey, if you throw a bunch of water bottles and beer cans and everything like that on the field to delay things, maybe your call will get overturned. I think it's a – most of the time it's not going to get overturned, I don't think, and you want to avoid this happening. But I think the fact that this happened one time, college students are going to be college students, and it's going to happen again some point this season where a fan base is going to be ticked off with a call. They're going to throw stuff on the field, and then they're going to see if it gets reversed or anything like that. Like it'll go away if it doesn't happen again. But the fact that you opened up Pandora's box in a way for this possibility, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens again. Not a great moment, but yeah, this game, I was expecting a little bit more out of this game, Bink. But
me too.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised at the way that it went, but hey. It's college football, and we had a really good weekend otherwise, as far as the games are concerned. Another, I would say, A-graded weekend amidst the rough game that was Georgia and Texas.
We're talking to Drew Nixon from Cody and Gold, and as we do each and every Sunday at 11 o'clock. Pandora's box was already open even for Dan Lanning that put 12 men on the field, you know, to drain down clock, and the NCAA fixed that, so they're going to have other things to fix as well. bring up the Oklahoma game just because they were smoked at home by South Carolina. That's a team, I understand the injuries have been bad for them, but the fact that they let South Carolina do that to them, again, Oklahoma's now 4-3, 1-3 in the SEC. And I think the whole narrative of this is, welcome to the SEC. You're not going out and playing Baylor this week. It's a team like South Carolina, which, yes, it's a team like South Carolina, not exactly a juggernaut. They're 4-3, but they smoke them. That's what happens in the SEC.
100%. I mean, I think the same thing in a way for Texas, because if you look at the schedule, they play Mississippi. They haven't played anybody. Texas hasn't played anybody yet. They play Michigan. Michigan's defense are solid, but Michigan are not going to be in the top 25 after they just lost to Illinois. So up until this point, they hadn't played a single top 25 team. Welcome to the SEC. This is what you have to deal with if you want to be on top of the college football world. Same thing with USC and the Big Ten. They're now 3-4. Lincoln Riley's got some question marks made about him. The Brent Venables thing is interesting because they burned Jackson Arnold's red shirt too. So it's a little bit of a mess over there in Norman. But I think in fairness, Shane Beamer has done a really nice job. I mean, South Carolina's only a few plays away from only having one loss on the season and having beaten LSU and Alabama.
Two more games to talk about. There's plenty I'd want to talk to you about, Drew, but we have we'll talk about it. You and I text each other back and forth, which is great when we're watching things and going, because I was going, Jalen Milroe. We're talking, you know, many people consider him a top five quarterback in the NFL. I saw inaccurate pass after inaccurate pass down the stretch. Kalen DeBoer loses 24-17 to Tennessee the third Saturday in October. Tennessee's now won two of the last three against Alabama after a nice 15-year stretch in which Alabama won every game. But again, I come away going, where's the quarterback play for Alabama? This sets up Missouri at a reeling Alabama next weekend.
Yeah, Alabama's a really interesting team, and I think Missouri fans should have been wanting Alabama to win that football game, by the way, as crazy as that sounds, because Missouri needs a signature win, and not that Alabama wouldn't be a signature win, but them only having one loss and you beating them and one of their only two losses on the season being against you guys, I think that would have stood out a little bit more to the committee. But
yeah, but Vanderbilt looks better because Missouri beat them and they beat Alabama, so there is that.
Yep. In fairness, yeah, that is the if your signature win is Vandy, though, I know that Vandy is better than what people think, but I think to the committee, if your signature win is Vanderbilt or Boston College, you're not getting in, even if you're in the SEC and you only have two losses. To your point about the Alabama-Tennessee game, Alabama, I think, to be honest, I still think they're the better team, but Tennessee's defense is the most elite position group or the most elite part of either team. Tennessee's defense is legit. Offensively, they have some struggles, and they have a hard time doing some stuff. Nico Iamaliava is a little bit inconsistent at times. Defensively, though, they are juggernaut. Tennessee played Georgia here in a couple weeks. Two really good defenses. I'm intrigued to see where that one goes. If you're Alabama, though, I think you're really not necessarily questioning the Kalen DeBoer hire, but the idea of they're going to be okay because – they got Kalen DeBoer and Nick Saban is gone, but that's okay because present times are among us and we got Kalen DeBoer. You're starting to have the reality check of, okay, we did lose the GOAT and nobody is as good as the GOAT. So Alabama's not, they're more shaky, and it's not just because of the players that left or the players they still have. It's because the head coach, the greatest college football coach of all time, is no longer there.
Props to Army and Navy. Army goes to 7-0. Navy goes to 6-0. Army wins 45-28 over East Carolina. Navy beats Charlotte 51-17. If you haven't seen Bryson Daly play quarterback at Army, definitely watch. He's got over 900 yards rushing. He had 171 yesterday. Obviously, yeah. He throws or runs a lot more than he passes. 7-10 for 147, but he had 171 yards and 5 touchdowns on the ground for Bryson Daly. If you haven't seen this dude play, watch him play. This dude's a stud.
Bink, I think that this is one of the cooler underlying stories of the entire season. As you look at Navy and you look at Army, both of them are undefeated. You look at next weekend. I wish the game was in Annapolis. I understand why it's not, I guess, because they wanted to do neutral site with Navy and Notre Dame. But you could have put College Game Day in Annapolis for the Navy-Notre Dame game. If Navy beat Notre Dame, they could coast to a college football playoff appearance, essentially, if they can get by Army at the end of the year. Navy throw the ball a little bit more than what people think. Army, to your point with Daly, the quarterback, these are not your typical Army and Navy teams. Very, very good. They can throw the ball as well at times when they need to. They're tearing up everybody who they're playing. It's not even close, a lot of these matchups. So those are the two group of five teams to watch, I think, outside of maybe Boise State or UNLV, who could maybe make a push for the college football playoff and triple option team in the playoff. It's hard to practice that. Who knows what can happen?
Oh, I did say, I do have one more for you, Drew, as we're talking to Drew Nixon, because you're from the state of Indiana. But what's going on with Kurt Cignetti at Indiana is unbelievable. College Game Day is going to go to Indiana. I think it is funny because it's going to be a Big Ten Network game against Northwestern. But Indiana moves to 7-0. They pounded, and I mean absolutely pounded, Nebraska, who takes their 26th straight loss against the ranked team. Beat them 56-7, and Curtis Rourke, who's starting to get some Heisman consideration, didn't even play in the second half, and they still won 56-7 over Nebraska. Indiana, 4-0 now in the conference, the only Big Ten team to cross two time zones and win when they beat UCLA earlier. Unbelievable start.
I think that they might be favored in every single game the rest of the way, other than the Ohio State game being that they play in the penultimate game of the regular season. Kurt, it was interesting. Rick Neuheisel had a quote, and I don't remember if this was before the season or a couple games in, but he said Kurt Cignetti is the next Nick Saban. And when you look at his face when they're up 42-7, and Kurt Cignetti looks pissed, and it's 42-7, you have the right football coach. Nick Saban was furious at times when they're up 42-7 in games at Alabama. IU's got the right coach, and it's crazy to think that Indiana football has a team that and a head coach who's legit. But if you look at what he did at JMU, if you look at what he's doing now, he has flipped that culture in literally 9 months, and they are one of the best teams in college football. As you said, Curtis Rourke definitely deserving of maybe making an appearance in New York, and who knows, if they went out and go undefeated, maybe he's actually the Heisman Trophy winner. That story is really cool, because in college we get these stories where the unpredictable happens, and I use one of these unpredictable stories where nobody thought that they'd be 7-0 going into this game against Washington, and who knows, they might be undefeated when they go to play Ohio State too.
They were predicted second to last in the Big Ten in the media poll. Unbelievable. And speaking of Saban, I'll never forget, after winning the national title and the confetti's coming down, he had this look about him like he didn't care. He wanted to go on to next season. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I already make the one today. Drew Nixon, check out 249 Miles of College Football. The podcast comes out each and every Wednesday. He'll have a ton of great stuff to talk about this week as we're in the meat and potatoes of the college football season. Thanks, Drew.
Bink, I appreciate it as always. Have a good one.
Thank you. I could talk to Drew forever, man, which I did, but literally talk to Drew forever. Coming up next, there's something we do every week before we start looking at the NFL slate at 11:30. Today's burning question. Next. I love that smack talking on those introductions for the Niners today. Niners and Chiefs coming up at 3:25, coming up in about 32 minutes. Chiefs pregame, the great Art Haynes, Dan Israel, checking in Mitch Holtis, Dan and Hughes, Josh Klingler, the crew getting you set for the Chiefs and Niners, where the Chiefs have won the last four games over Kyle Shanahan in the San Francisco 49ers. In the day, do you listen to podcasts much, Quinn?
I'm a big podcast guy.
Do you ever listen to New Heights? It was, the Kelsey brothers.
Yeah.
Do you know which podcast, and they all do them, Debo's doing one with George Kittle out in Frisco. Do you know the podcast I really, really would like to see? It'd probably be short-lived because I think one of them will be coaching next year. Do you know what I want to see? I want to see the Belichick
Saban
podcast. Those two, man, the way Belichick is doing awesome in the media and his breakdowns, and Saban breaks it down great all the time, but they're friends. Matter of fact, Saban was on Belichick's staff in Cleveland. I think that'd make just a tremendous podcast. I'll never forget that 30 for 30 they had. I don't know, it wasn't 30 for 30. I don't know what it was, but it was a story about Saban and Belichick. And Belichick went down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama when Saban was coaching.
To ask him about players, right?
Yeah, they were just down there talking. They were breaking things down. The funny thing was, Belichick had asked the cameras to leave like at the beginning. And then they didn't leave. The cameras in there. They went, instead of like talking about their family, they went straight into talking about 4-3 versus 3-4. They went straight into defensive talk, and it was outstanding. But that would make just a tremendous podcast for football fans. The Saban Belichick, get it done, people. Get it done, advertisers. Get this thing done. That would be absolutely awesome. Time for the burning question, Quentin. Last week was your burning question. Today, my burning question for the text line, Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. And I'll ask you as well, Quentin. Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City Royals. Do the Chiefs win two more Super Bowls for the Royals win one? Or will the Royals win it all? Or will they win more than the Chiefs? Will the Chiefs win two Super Bowls before the Royals win a World Series again?
I think my first impression is to go with the Chiefs just because there's more of a history there with Kansas City being so successful.
And Mahomes and four last five.
Exactly. And I'm a believer in what J.J. Piccolo and what the Royals have done last year, last offseason, what they just did, you know, making it to the second round of the playoffs. And so when I pick the Chiefs to win two over the Royals to win one, it's really more of what I think about the Chiefs, and it is no way an indictment on the Royals and what I believe they are moving forward.
Hey, it's just tough. It's just different parameters. The NFL is done just differently than Major League Baseball is. It is truly the haves and have-nots at times, and I get it. You know, you get Mahomes and Bobby Wood Jr. and all that, but the Chiefs have proven to be the best in the league, and you can't say that the Royals are the best in the American League. I mean, they're on their way, but Cleveland's still going to be there. I know the Yankees beat Cleveland, but they're not going anywhere. Detroit's getting better, but I would lean with the Chiefs.
Yeah, and especially because I think, you know, next year I think we're going to see a lot of similar people, you know, on the field, especially in the pitching department. You know, Seth Lugo's still going to be here.
Don't forget about Kyle Wright. And, everybody's forgetting about Kyle Wright.
Right. I think that there's going to be a lot of similar guys on the field, both pitching and on the diamond. Whereas, you know, 2 years from now, I think this team's going to look very different. And because you just have so much turnover in baseball, whereas the Chiefs, yes, you have a lot of turnover, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes is still going to be here, right? Andy Reid's still going to be here. So I think you're just going to have more similarity in key positions. Whereas the Royals, Bobby Witt Jr. will be here 3 years from now, but will guys like Salvador Perez, you know, Seth Lugo won't be here. So there are just... there are more questions about the Royals moving forward where there's not for Kansas City.
Hey, by the way, yesterday on College Game Day, something you and I talked about before, the fall weddings, don't do them. Marty McGee did a segment on that. They had a little bit of fun with it, where they pretended like they were at a wedding or whatever. But anyway, Marty McGee did a segment on that too, as most of the nation kind of with us, you don't get married in the fall. Because evidently it was an extremely popular wedding date yesterday for the fall, like one of the top, which I have no idea why, but... it is for some stupid reason, but I digress.
Maybe it's because, you know, it's a month before some of the other big holidays, you know, Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving, right? So yeah. You want your anniversary to be before all of that other stuff starts.
Come up next, which we do it every Sunday at about 11:30, we look at the slate of NFL games today. And then, of course, 11:45, we give you our bet against the spread. Quentin moves to 5-1. I am 4-1 as I pushed one. Got a bad break, but we'll do that at 11:45 NFL slate next. Well, unlike the Revolutionary War, the Patriots lost today where they won, but they lost in London to Dougie Fresh, 32-16 in the Jacksonville Jaguars, 22 points in the second quarter was the difference there. Before we hop into the NFL slate, Steven, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, Big Man. It was a great day of college football yesterday, I got to say.
Awesome.
I had a little different take. I think this was the rest of the SEC meeting Texas yesterday. This is what happened. Like Mark Mangino used to say, dollar signs and BCS playoffs. You know, Kirby is such a little baby, you know, whining and complaining. You know, he couldn't let it go even a couple hours afterwards. I mean, for such a winner, for such a guy who has been on an epic roll of 43 in a row regular season games. This guy is the biggest. These guys in the deep SEC are the biggest babies I've ever seen. I mean, did you see any of that stuff?
Oh, I did. I saw him upset with that. I will say this, though. You know, Kirby Smart, the play was, when they reversed the decision, it was the right call. But typically that doesn't happen. Like, I get his point on that. They've also won 50 straight. They were the underdog in this game, which I think teed them off. They've been the favorite 50 straight games. The only ones they haven't in that span has been a team called Alabama. But now we'll look forward to the NFL slate because we already have one that's done. The Jaguars staying in London for two straight weeks. They're going to be coming back now. They win 32-16 over the New England Patriots today. Some interesting matchups today, starting at, we'll get to the Titans-Bills. I'll save this one for the final segment because unless you have something to say on it, Quentin.
Yeah.
Will Levis not playing. It'll be Mason Rudolph in this one.
Titans are, you know, this was a team that spent a lot of money on defense and was just like, I guess the offense doesn't matter.
Well, they have the best defense in the NFL statistically. They do. But if you want them to lose to the Bills, which I don't know why you'd want the Bills to win because you want DeAndre Hopkins maybe being expendable to end up in Kansas City. Seahawks at the Falcons start things off as well as the noon slate. The Bengals and the Browns. The Bengals have lost six straight in Cleveland. The interesting thing here is Jameis Winston is now the emergency quarterback. It's Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the backup quarterback. Why are they doing this? Are they doing A, to trade Jameis? B, they don't want the controversy between Jameis and Deshaun Watson because that's the name they've been screaming, not DTR.
I think that's the reason is that people are saying, hey, play Winston. We know Winston has an arm. We know Winston is a gunslinger. I mean, he's the only member of the 30-30 club for a reason. And no matter how bad Jameis Winston plays, he'll be better than Deshaun Watson, who's been historically bad. So if we make him the emergency quarterback, we take him out of the game, then, you know, maybe we can lessen the controversy that calls for him to play.
Texans and Packers at noon. This is an interesting one.
This is going to be a great game.
This is going to be great. We need Texans to start losing. Like, if you're a Chiefs fan, you want the Texans to start taking those L's. Because, again, the NFC doesn't matter. If you're a Chiefs fan, you want the Packers to win in this game. But Jordan Love versus C.J. Stroud, it's be a good game.
I think Packers have been
Packers 3-point favorites.
Yeah, Packers have been a good team. Houston's been a good team. Both of these teams have been hyped up for a little bit during the offseason. You know, all around, offense, defense, every position matchup, this is going to be a good game.
Dolphins and Colts, yeah. So what in this game? It looks like Tua may be on schedule to begin practice again next week, whether he comes back in a couple weeks or not. That's really the only interesting thing there.
This would have been interesting if both quarterbacks were healthy.
The noon slate's good because then you have, I think, the marquee game of the noon slate, Lions and Vikings. The Vikings 5-0. Can they keep it up? They've got very good scoring defense, fourth in the NFL. Versus Jared Goff. Jared Goff, I think, is not getting his run for league MVP. He's been tremendous this year. But all of a sudden, that is a huge game now between the Lions and the Vikings. And Minnesota is just a 1.5-point favorite.
Even though this is early in the year, you know, this could be the decision maker between who wins and loses that division. Because I think they're, you know, all four of these teams really of the NFC North are going to be fighting for that division till the end of the year.
Eagles and Giants at noon.
Stinker.
Nick Sirianni. I mean, this guy continues to talk trash to his home fans. Will he talk trash to the Giants fans today? Saquon Barkley's return to New York. Will they boo him or not? I saw him signing autographs before the game, but Philadelphia 3-point favorites in that one. 3:05 slate, Raiders and Rams. Both these teams are sad. The Rams are actually 7-point favorites, believe it or not. Both these teams are sad. Will the Raiders get spanked? Will Tom Brady make a move on Pierce or wait till the end of the season and try to lure Belichick? Cooper Kupp's not going to play today, it didn't look like. There was talk that he might be able to play. Puka Nacua is still a few weeks away from playing, but that's a bad matchup right there. Panthers, Commanders. Again, a dud with the Panthers, 1-5. They suck. Commanders are a fun team to watch. I know Carrington's moved on from Charger Dot. He's Washington Dot. But they're a fun team to watch, man. Jaden Daniels and that offense. Remember, they went two straight games this year earlier where they didn't even punt. But that's a fun team to watch.
It is. And, you know, it's that those running quarterbacks, even though I wouldn't designate him as a running quarterback, but those really athletic quarterbacks that can break the pocket. And as a football fan, just watching it, they're always exciting to watch because a big play can come just like that. So this will be a good game.
We'll keep the Chiefs and 49ers to the next segment. We'll talk about that game then. Tonight's game, the Jets and the Steelers. The Steelers.
Stinker.
The funny thing is these national reporters say, well, it looks like Russell Wilson's going to be the starter. No, George Pickens, the Steelers receiver, deserves all the credit for that because he slipped up and said that Russell Wilson is going to be the starter. So I don't care about the Rappaports or anything like that. George Pickens broke this story, but for the Jets, Devontae Adams in the picture now with his old friend Aaron Rodgers. This actually billing up, to be a pretty interesting game.
I am not a believer in Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. I don't care that Devontae Adams is there, losing franchise. That's all I have to say about that.
The Steelers' offense is so bad. And Thursday night, the Broncos, 33-10, as they pasted the Saints and Sean Payton's return. Tomorrow night, two games. You get one, it's ESPN Plus. Only ESPN Plus, that's the Chargers and the Cards, and that starts at 8 o'clock. But at 7:15, Ravens and the Buccaneers. Hey, I'm wanting to see this. Hey, the Ravens are now everybody's darling, even though, look at their defensive statistics, nowhere near as good as they've been in the past. On defense, now Derrick Henry, that dude's a freak.
I like these Monday doubleheaders, and I know they're trying to fiddle with the time clock to figure out what's best for these doubleheaders. I want them to continue them, but man, I'm not watching a game at 9 o'clock at night. I got a life to live.
On ESPN Plus, nonetheless.
Yeah. So move it up. Let's do like earlier in the year when they started, you had one game start 45 minutes before the other one. That was perfect. Go back to that NFL. Don't start. Was it Monday night in like the 90s when they first started Monday Night Football? Didn't it start at like 9 o'clock at night?
No, it started in the 70s, man.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, didn't it start, you know, wasn't 9 o'clock the original time slot for Monday Night Football?
It started later, I'm thinking, with Cosell and stuff and Gifford and whatnot.
Just move it up, all right? We'll start one at 7, start another one at 7:30. We'll call it good.
Coming up next, though, our upsets of the week, our NFL picks of the week. Quentin's 5-1, I move to 4-1-1. We'll discuss those next. And welcome back. Final segment, leading you right into Art Haynes, Dan Israel, Mitch Holtis, Dana Hughes, Josh Klingler. Just keep it locked in right here at 96.5 The Fan, as we have Chiefs pregame and the Kansas City Chiefs game coming up. All right. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention Hassan Reddick got his deal done today. They've waived the, $15 million he owed, something like that. He owed a bunch, but Hassan Reddick back for the Jets. Not this week, but he'll be playing next week. All right. You're 5-1. I'm 4-1-1. I'll let you start off with your upset of the week.
I don't get this opportunity very often, so I'm just going to go ahead and take advantage of it. And I'm going to pick the Chiefs, who are 1.5-point underdogs against the 49ers. Here are just some crazy stats for you just to realize how, one, little Patrick Mahomes has been an underdog in his career, but also just how well he's played as an underdog. Patrick Mahomes is 10-3 as an underdog. This includes the playoffs. He is 11-1-1 against the spread. But here's some other crazy stats. First of all, 4 out of the last 5 playoff games he's played, he's been an underdog. Obviously has won all of them. That goes back to the Eagles Super Bowl game. As a team, the Chiefs score 32.5 points per game when they're underdogs. He has a 38-11 touchdown interception ratio, and he has a passer rating of 112.3. Patrick Mahomes is amazing when he plays as the underdog. I don't get an opportunity to do it very much, so of course I'm going to pick Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City as the underdog. That's my pick.
And a couple other things. You know, the San Francisco, the defense is nowhere near where it's been. You'll have Ricky Pearsall. Props to him, by the way. He got shot, and he's going to play today. He's their first-round pick, pick 31. Juwan Jennings not playing today. Of course, Ayuk, Kittle playing, and then I'm not worried about the running game, whether Jordan Mason is going to be banged up a little bit, but Isaac Arendo can handle the job as well. I use the FanDuel odds. I'm getting +9 on the Titans. +9 Titans, Bills. Yeah, I'm going to go this direction. I think the spread is way too big when you look at the National Football League. You went with this heavily. It was near, was 8.5, 9 points last week when you took Cleveland and Philly. I'm taking the Titans plus the 9. Hey, Titans still do have the number one defense in the National Football League. Going against the Buffalo Bills, they should have Amari Cooper today playing in that game. But the plus 9, again, Mason Rudolph's going to get the start for the Titans. I think he's better than Will Levis, to be quite honest with you. I think this is actually better for the Titans in this situation. They still have weapons. That defense is solid. But you're talking about getting 9 points and having the number one defense in the National Football League.
Yeah, the 9-point spread is big. I would be worried about the quarterback shift. I don't know how much different the quarterback play is going to be honest with you. But, you know, and Buffalo getting Amari Cooper for the first week, I don't think it's going to be that big of an impact. We all know what L'Jarius Sneed can do against wide receivers, so I'm not sure that's going to be much of an impact. But, I mean, I've been doing this really all year long, right? I've been picking these big spreads because I think people just forget how competitive the National Football League is. It's why earlier in the year I picked the Panthers to cover. It's why last week I picked the Browns to cover.
I mean, you have blowouts, but, man, 3 to 7 points, that's still a big win in the NFL.
Yeah, and so, in fact, when we looked at it earlier, you know, earlier in the week, it was 8.5-point spread, and this morning when we looked at it again, it was 9.
On
so
FanDuel,
more and more people are betting for the Bills. So, yeah, it's a big spread, and it keeps getting bigger. So it's crazy that we keep seeing these big spreads throughout this far into the NFL season.
Oh, by the way, I mentioned Baltimore's defense and how Baltimore's getting all the flowers lately, right? They're 23rd in the NFL in scoring defense, 24.8. 34. They're just 1 yard different. Jacksonville's the worst pass defense in the NFL. Baltimore's number two, and there's only 1 yard per game that separates the two there.
They should have been in the Sneed hunt. That's what they should have been because they have had a very, very bad pass defense.
And Sneed's not been playing that well. I mean, he's one of the worst-rated cornerbacks in the National Football League, but defensively, that's a solid football team. But in essence, what do you want? You want the Titans to win and give Buffalo that extra L? I think you always would go that direction. DeAndre Hopkins has become expendable. The Titans start trading things off if they take the L today. That's one of the questions there.
Do you think Kansas City's in the DeAndre Hopkins market?
I know that they liked it. I know there was interest there. But, again, I don't care about for the future. I don't care if they're over 30 years old because you need them just until February because that's kind of what you need.
I mean, at this point, we talked about it earlier in the show, Kansas City needs to add – to their wide receiver core, because when we saw that Juju Smith-Schuster was hurt earlier in the week, we were really thinking that this was going to be a Sky Moore game.
And Chiefs, just different style of football. That's why I think this is Andy Reid's best year coaching, to be honest with you. I thought last year was, this year might be too, because he's had to adjust on what he's done. He was dealt different cards than what he thought he had in St. Joe, but he's making that adjustment. Thanks, great job by you, Quentin Morris. Thanks to Drew Nixon coming on each and every week talking college football. Just keep it locked in here to 96.5 The Fan. Mitch Holtis, Dan and Hughes, Josh Klinger bringing you the game. But coming up next, we the great Art Haynes, great Dan Israel and company doing the Chiefs pregame show. I don't know about you, Quinn, but I look forward to this each and every Sunday, man. I know people are driving around, getting church, coming back, getting plans for the game later. Enjoy, everybody. Take care.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.